You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. For the last 2 days, I've been off the air. Tuesday, we were preempted by the Dallas Community College Board of Trustees meeting, and that happens the first Tuesday of every month, so there's nothing I can do about that. And yesterday, I thought I was going to be on the air. However, I had to really attend this staff meeting of the Richland Chronicle, and they usually only go 20 to 30 minutes. Well, this one went especially long, and because of that, it didn't make sense to have a 15 or 20-minute program, because at 5, I have to get off. So for the last 2 days, we have been off the air, so I have a number of stories that I want to really highlight and lead up into my Friday program. This is sort of like a catch-up show, and I'll go over what I was going to talk Tuesday and Wednesday and maybe even add some information and lead into Friday's program. The big news Tuesday was the president finally released his U.S. federal budget. His Office of Management and Budget released over a month late the presidential's budget. And what's interesting about it, in total spending, he wants to spend over $3.9 trillion. And he's estimating, and I think this is really being on the high side, that the tax revenues, and this is for the budget, is for fiscal year 2015 that starts this coming October and ends 30 September of next year, 2015. He's estimating tax revenues, or his Office of Management and Budget is estimating tax revenues of $3.33 trillion. So in round numbers, we're going to get, if you believe his estimate, a deficit of $546 billion, which would be his lowest, because last year it was only $680 billion. But it's still over half a trillion dollars. And no president from George Washington through George W. Bush, even though the Democrats controlled both the House and the Senate when Bush was president his last 2 years, no president has had consistently high deficits of half a trillion dollars. And for four of those years, it was over $1 trillion. This president believes that big government is the answer. It hasn't worked out. His economic policies are a total failure. And what's sad is this is hurting tens of millions of Americans. And his budget reflects he hasn't learned. Some presidents actually grow in office. This president has been consistently wrong in office. He's lied to the American people. His economic policies have been a failure, as well as his foreign policy has been a failure. And you see it in the report that came out last week that the real GDP for 2013, that's all of 2013, grew at 1.9%. 1.9%. Historically, the gross domestic product, which is all final goods and services that the entire U.S. economy produces in a year, grows around a little over 3%, 3.1%. So you can see we're right at about two-thirds of the historical trend. And the reason why that's important, what has been the trend in GDP? Well, in 2012, it was actually a little bit better. It was 2.8%. So we went from 2.8% in 2012 to 1.9%. In other words, this is not a booming recovery. It's not negative growth. We're not in a recession. But we really haven't had job growth. There's been a gap of over 10 million, 10 to 12 million jobs short. Because every month, and we'll find out about this on Friday, we get the unemployment report, and I'll give you my update. But every month, between 130,000 to 150,000 high school as well as college dropouts and graduates enter the labor force looking for their first full-time job. And the jobs simply aren't there, and that's reflected in the high unemployment rates for teenagers above 20% for the entire for every day the Obama administration has been in office. Teenage unemployment is shot up to over 20%. And what is President Obama's answer? It's more government. He wants more federal spending. less than several weeks ago, there was an agreement on caps that this budget breaks. So the president's budget, for all practical purposes, is dead on arrival. DOA. You might as well put it in the trash or put it in your machine that chops up the paper, shredder, because his budget, neither the Senate nor the House will pass. Just like several of his budgets that have gone down defeat where literally only a handful of people voted for it. So it's not serious. He's not serious at all. He thinks the answer is more and more government spending. More taxes and more government spending. That's all he can think of. Now, he doesn't call it spending. He calls it investment. The problem, Mr. President, those investments have to be paid by taxes on the American people or more debt. And this president has run deficits of $1.4 trillion, $1.3 trillion, $1.3 trillion, $1.1 trillion, and last year $680 billion. And we're going to have another one of over half a trillion dollars. It'll probably be closer to $600 billion, because if the economy goes into the recession, which I think it's headed towards, I mean, the trend is not good. Things are slowing down dramatically. It won't take much to push this economy into two quarters of negative growth, which technically are a recession. And what's made matters worse, and this is really the second story, in 2013, all of last year, the labor participation rate for all of last year was at 63.2%. You would have to go back to 1978, when President Jimmy Carter was president, to find such a low participation rate. And the way to think of it is it's very simple. You're either employed, unemployed, or you don't participate. You're not seeking a job. And there are many reasons why people don't seek a job. They could be retired. They could decide to stay home, have the spouse or usually the husband work, and mom stay home and take care of the kids. But now there's another reason. People simply can't find jobs. To put it in perspective, in year 2000, there were approximately 70 million people that weren't participating. In other words, they weren't employed, they weren't looking for a job or seeking a job, they weren't unemployed either, they simply were not participating. Today, it's over 92.5 million people. Now, many of those are voluntary, but over 20 million are not. It's simply people that can't find a job. They're discouraged. They've looked. And what makes matters even worse is many of the people that have been able to find a job cannot find a permanent full-time job. What they find is a part-time job where their number of hours that they can work every week is limited. I'm sitting on Richland College campus, and yes, most of the faculty here, upwards of 80% of the faculty here are part-time faculty. And most of those part-timers have full-time jobs someplace else. But there are a significant number of part-time faculty that would love to be full-time, but will never be full-time for various reasons. Because it is the policy of not only this college or community college district, but as well as other colleges across the United States, to increasingly rely in the last 20, 30 years on more and more part-time faculty. Why? To simply save money. They don't want to pay retirement benefits. They don't want to pay health insurance. So the word goes out, the policy goes out. Most of the people that they hire are part-timers. If everyone that taught at a college had to be a full-time faculty, the universities in this United States would close down. They literally could not open the doors. And that includes not only junior colleges or community colleges, but four-year colleges and some of the largest. They're relying on part-timers. That could be graduate students, or it could be people that have jobs in the private sector. Now, I'll be the first to say, probably the majority of people that are teaching here part-time want it that way. They have jobs at other places. I know that's I'm finishing up an associate's degree. I already have my bachelor's and master's, but I'm getting an associate's degree in mass communications. And two of my instructors are part-time instructors. One I know has his own business, and we're fortunate to have him. He knows what he's doing. He's a professional. Another lady, I'm not sure what she does. I know her husband did run a studio. But I suspect that she might want to to be teaching full-time. I don't know that for a fact. She hasn't really disclosed that. It's none of my business. But I have talked to other faculty. There's one that's a good friend of mine that's taught here for many years, at least 14 years. I'm going to take it back, probably more like 12 years. I've talked to him, and he said on more than one occasion, I'd love to have a full-time faculty position here. And he teaches at least one or two courses every quarter. But he has had many full-time jobs away from here because he's a programmer. So the reason I bring that up is you can't just look at the unemployment rate to get an assessment of what's happening with the economy. Because when this is by far the worst recovery that the United States economy has had since World War II. And the only way you're going to get back to near full-term, full employment, near full employment rates, which are typically you're going to get a range of estimates from economists, but between 3 and 4%, is the economy needs to be growing at above its historical rate. It needs to be growing at 4, 5, 6, or even 7 or 8%. We don't come close, ladies and gentlemen. That's why one of the charts I've shown at the very top of the first story has a chart of, and this is directly hot off the presses from the Department of Commerce Bureau of Economic Analysis that's responsible for putting out the gross domestic product GDP report, and they do it every month, their estimates. It's a table, it's at the very top, and the way you get to look at this or listen to the show is go to pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's pronkpops, P-R-O-N-K, P-O-P-S.wordpress.com. At the very top, you'll have links to this show as well as all my past shows. And below that, you'll have the story that I'm talking about, namely the president's budget did arrive at Congress Tuesday. But I wanted to show at the very, very, very top, before I got into any of the videos, any of the articles related to this story, and I provided that information. They're sort of my notes. It's not everything I look at, but I put videos, articles that are, as well as news stories that pertain to the current event or news item that I want to cover. Because what's negatively affecting the growth rate of GDP is the out of control federal spending. Ultimately, if you do away with all the jargon, all the BS, all the spins, all the lies, what's the core problem, the central core problem of the United States and the United States economy today? It is simply out of control government spending. We don't have a revenue problem. The government last year collected over $2.7 trillion. It's not revenue, it's spending that's out of control. And it's not one department. I always need to say this. There's no silver bullet here. Spending is out of control across all departments and many programs. Entitlements are out of control. Welfare programs are out of control. Defense is out of control. There's several departments that should be closed down permanently. Is the president proposing that? Absolutely not. He's going in the opposite direction. I try to think of a way to explain what's going on now. In the 1700s, if you were sick or injured, one of the ways that so-called medical doctors at the time would treat you is bleed you. They would stick leechers on you to suck your blood, and that was supposedly to make you well. That's what the government is doing today. They're sicking leechers on the producers in this economy and sucking them dry with taxes and regulations. What do you think Obamacare is about? It's sucking money out of your wallet, out of your purse. You know, money doesn't grow at trees. Where do you think the government gets this? They tax you. And for every cent, every dollar, trillions of dollars that the United States government is taking out of your wallets, that's less money that could be invested in the private sector. What the president needs to be reminded, because he apparently doesn't get it after 5 years, he's a slow learner. Where is wealth, income, and jobs created? Where is wealth, income, and jobs created? Mr. President, it's not in the government sector. Most of net new job creation is the formation of new businesses. There's small businesses, 5 or less employees. And if you add mid-sized businesses, 500 or less, that accounts for most, not all, but most of the new job creation. It is in the private sector. It is not in state or local or federal government jobs. So you want economic policies that provide incentives for businesses to first be formed and then develop or expand their operations. Higher taxes is not the answer, but that is Obama's answer. He likes to say, I have cut the deficit in half. Technically, that's true depending on your starting point. But what he never tells you is before he cut it in half, he nearly tripled it. Tripled it. So it's not an achievement, Mr. President. You're spinning, you're lying, you're misleading the American people once again. It's not your economic record is the worst since FDR. It's worse than Hoover, and it's worse than Roosevelt. And your economic policies are abject failures, as is your foreign policy, which I'll get into in a minute. So the president, and there were nice videos of the boxes coming to Congress with copies of the United States federal budget. The bottom line is you can take those boxes and throw them in the furnace. No one is going to pay any attention to them. They don't deserve an ounce of your time. The only thing, I was going to get into some detail on this. I'm not. All you need to know is he proposed spending $3.9 trillion. That's up over $400 billion from the previous year, the year we're in. Excuse me. That's up from fiscal year 2013 that ended in October, significantly. Congress isn't going to pass this. The House isn't. And for that matter, neither the Senate, even though it's controlled by the Democratic Party. So if this is his answer to the terrible, terrible recovery that we've had so far, he hasn't learned. He hasn't grown in office. You see, the problem, ladies and gentlemen, is Barack Obama was indoctrinated by a mentor. His mentor might be his father, but who knows? You didn't need to have DNA testing for that. No, I'm not talking about Barack Obama Sr. I'm talking about Frank Marshall Davis. That was his mentor in his teenage years. And he indoctrinated him into Marxism and communism and Stalinism. And it stuck. It worked. And don't believe me, read Barack Obama's autobiography. He kept referring to Frank, 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 Frank over and over and over again. He doesn't give his full name, but why? Because if he ever got in politics and gave his full name, people could easily trace it back as to who it was. There's been a book about Frank called The Communist. I recommend you read it or go to half-price bookstores. I know they have copies there. That's what's really warped our president's mind. That's why it's class warfare. The rhetoric of class warfare. That's why he accuses his critics as being racist at the drop of a hat. He doesn't want to really be engaged in terms of a discussion with people that know what he's peddling is garbage. So you're not going to change him. He's consistent, and he's consistently been attracted to the far left. And that's who he surrounds himself with. Red diaper babies, including his own strategist that got him the job. So his answer for any problem is just another government program or more money for all the federal programs that we have. The fact that it isn't working is irrelevant. He doesn't care. He has the nerve to go to black audiences, especially young people, and tout the fact that he's proposing an increase in the minimum wage. What would an increase in the minimum wage mean to young people, teenagers, people in their 20s? What does it mean for black people, especially young black people? I'll tell you. It means higher unemployment rates. In other words, they won't be able to find a job, an entry-level job that they need. He has the gall of telling audiences that this is going to help them, where the overwhelming majority, not everybody, of the economic profession will tell you that raising the minimum wage has an impact on teenage and early 20s. When you do that, what does it mean? Business owners simply cannot hire young people at that wage. They might be able to hire them at $5 or $6 or $7, but they can't hire them at $10.10 or whatever the number is that's higher than that. It invariably means teenagers will be laid off, and many more simply won't be able to find a job. That's his answer. That's one of his answers. Why does he propose this? He should know better. Why does he propose this? It's a payoff to one of his biggest backers, the unions. Do you think the unions care about black teenagers or any teenager? No, they don't. They want a higher minimum wage because it raises their pay scale of all the people that are part of the union. The unions are the biggest pushers for increases in the minimum wage. And they have used it in the past to do what? To discriminate against black people. That's a fact. That's the history. Yet we have a president over and over again touts the fact that he wants, as does the Democratic Party, an increase of the minimum wage. I'm sure there are former members of the Ku Klux Klan that are clapping. Why? What does that mean? Fewer black people, fewer Hispanics, and fewer poor white people that are young can get on that career path for a job, can't find their first job. That's the impact of raising the minimum wage. Because every time they've done it, what has happened? The teenage unemployment rate has gone up, up, and up. The dirty little secret is less than 3% of the entire workforce is paid the minimum wage. Actually, it's less than 2%. However, the people most affected are new entrants into the workforce, your teenagers, your dropouts, as well as your high school graduates. Some, when they were still in high school, were working part-time. But after they graduated or dropped out, they were looking for a full-time job. And the higher you make the minimum wage, the less likely they're going to be able to find one. This is not a new problem. This has been going on for 50 years. And the Democratic Party has demagogued this over and over and over again. Yet black economists such as Thomas Sowell and others have pointed out this hurts blacks, black teenagers, young people. It hurts young people. The unskilled, the inexperienced. And I always say, which would you rather have? You could have the minimum wage, but what are most of the unemployed getting? They're getting zero. They'd be much rather be making $5 an hour or $6 or $7 an hour than zero. Even they can do the simple math here. So why the payoff is in terms of the president proposing this, and the Democratic Party wants to pass it, at least up to now, the Republican Party is resisting that. Because this hurts employers, but it really hurts the employees. Now they'll say, well, you've heard the phrase, a living wage. We have to have a living wage. Most of the people that are making the minimum wage are teenagers. And where do they live? They live at home. Many of them are high school and college students. They need money to pay for books and tuition and their expenses. And that part-time job or summer job is very, very important to them. But when you raise the minimum wage, you're not doing them any favors. You're actually hurting them and causing more unemployment. And you get that right from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, Department of Labor. They have the information in glorious detail. But that is what the president has been saying over and over. We have to increase the minimum wage, as if that's the answer. And we have to spend more money. You see, there are some things the president wants to spend money on that I think most Americans would be in favor of. For example, we have a highway system that includes things like bridges, overpasses, that is deteriorating. We need to spend money in repairing our highways, and I'm for that. But to pay for them, what you need to do is cut the spending of other departments. That he doesn't want to do. What he wants to do is increase taxes. In one sentence, all this budget is a massive increase in government spending and tax. And that is supposedly going to get us higher economic growth. It didn't work. The so-called stimulus package that was passed in the early part of the Obama's first administration in 2009 was supposed to, by now, get us below 5%. We should be heading towards 4%. We're at 6.6, but with a much higher participation rate. Because you see, ladies and gentlemen, In the late 1990s, the labor participation rate was at 67.1%. See, if the economy were booming, the labor participation rate would be above 60%. Well, first of all, it would definitely be above 66%, but it should be above 67%. We're not close. We are not close, and that's the problem. Government is out of control. We have a federal government that we simply cannot pay for. The American people cannot afford this mammoth, massive, huge federal government. It needs to be cut down by at least a third because we need to borrow. The federal government needs to borrow to pay its bills approximately 35 cents out of every dollar that it spends. That's out of control it is. See, a balanced budget means you have zero deficit. And that's the way individuals, families, businesses, charities, churches, schools, colleges, cities, counties, states run. They have to balance their budget. They have to live within the means of the people that support them, which is the American people. And that's truly worldwide, not just in the United States. But we have a federal government that literally can't balance its budget. It's not even close. I'm not against a little debt, because a little debt can be used to finance capital, such as for an individual buying a home or a car, or for a business, a plant, or an office, or a factory. Debt is not the problem. What is the problem is out-of-control government spending. And there's no urgency at all from President Obama, or for that matter, the Democratic Party, to balance the budget. And their answer is not cutting government spending. Their answer is more and more and higher taxes. That is their answer. And if that's not enough, more and more debt. That is a dangerous, dangerous formula. It's a dangerous scenario. When you go down that road, what happens? Debt gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And ultimately, servicing that debt in terms of paying interest and principal becomes so onerous that you can't pay it. And that is slowly what's going to happen. Because what the Federal Reserve has been doing in conjunction with our federal government spending more than it's collecting is expanding both the money supply and credit. They're buying, they're financing the federal government. They're supposedly independent. They're not independent. That's a joke. That's a myth. That's what the propaganda is, that the Federal Reserve is truly independent. No, it's not. Because when the Treasury can't sell its bonds, who do they turn to as a buyer first resort? They turn to the Federal Reserve, which is the central bank of the United States. You need money to pay the bills. And if financial institutions, as well as individuals, as well as sovereign nations, are not buying Treasury securities, primarily notes, but also bonds and a lot less bills, what has to happen? Well, somebody has to buy them, and who buys them? The Federal Reserve. So three things are happening. Because we're living way beyond, the federal government is spending more than the American people can pay in taxes. They have had to borrow, and now the borrowing is so great that people are not investing in treasuries. And what I mean by that, let me make very, very clear. Treasuries is a huge market, but the interest rates have been suppressed, controlled by the Federal Reserve. It's not a market-determined rate. And what I'm talking about is the federal funds rate, the overnight market for federal funds. That's been manipulated and controlled. That's the price of money, the way to think of it. And that has been arbitrarily kept low to keep the cost of the federal government's borrowing low. But when inflation comes roaring back, what's going to have to happen? And the Fed knows this. They're going to have to switch from an easy monetary policy, or what's called an accommodative monetary policy. Right now, we have an easy or accommodative monetary policy. If inflation comes back, which I think it will, and I mean above the 2% that the Fed targets, then you're going to have a tight monetary, which means interest rates, namely the federal funds rate, is going to have to go up significantly. Much higher. See, it's at least suppressed by 2%. Some would say higher, somewhere between 2 and 3%. And as you get inflation, that's going to even have to be higher than that. So once that happens, the cost of the federal government of borrowing will skyrocket. And interest will be an increasingly larger percentage of the federal government. That's going to happen, folks. I don't know exactly when, but it will. And when it does, inflation will come roaring back just like it did in the 70s. And then we're going to get both. We're going to be in what's called right now, I would describe the U.S. economy as stagnating. We have subpar growth rates. We're roughly growing about two-thirds what we're two-thirds below the trend line when we should be, instead of being at 3%, we're at 1.9% for last year. That's two-thirds. We should be growing more than the trend line of 3.1%. We should be growing at 4, 5, 6%. We never will be growing at that as long as the federal government continues these nutty fiscal pop. I call it fiscal insanity because it never ends well. And it is hurting tens of millions of Americans as we speak. Yeah, we have a better safety net, namely welfare programs, than we had in the 30s. But that's not a life. You know, the answer to poverty, Mr. President, the answer to income inequality, Mr. President, the answer for these poor, below par employment numbers, the answer is a good-paying job, and you will never increase those number of jobs until entrepreneurs and business owners have a strong incentive to start businesses and expand businesses. The economy is sliding into another recession. It's also going to have high inflation rate, and that's called stagflation, just like we had in the 1970s under President Jimmy Carter. And yes, President Reagan inherited. We have a mess in Washington. There's no urgency. We have gridlock government. The best you can hope for is the Republicans will not only maintain control of the House, but also will increase their numbers in the Senate so they control the Senate. That's the best you can hope for because the president, unless he's impeached, and I don't think he will, by the way, still has a little less than 3 years in office. In other words, the optimistic situation is by 2017, which is 3 years from today, we'll have a completely controlled House, Senate, and presidency by Republicans. But it depends what the Republicans do. That's the most optimistic. I'm not very optimistic about that because when the last time the Republicans had that control under George Bush, they did, not exactly, but they went on a spending binge just like President Obama did. Because what happened? We had 9-1-1 and the economy slid into a recession. And as a result, Congress and the president spent money. That seems to be the answer. They think the answer is spending more government money. More stimulus packages. It doesn't matter whether the stimulus package, so-called stimulus packages, which haven't worked, whether it's a Republican or Democrat, that's not the answer either. That's just more government. I'm looking at the time. I really did not get into some of the stories that I wanted to, namely an update on the Ukraine. I really didn't have time to. I'll hit that tomorrow, but I'm going to have to shut it down because we're approaching 5 o'clock. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Thank you for listening.